I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. 610, hi. I'm Steve. What is move is stressful already. I'm 10 minutes into the move, it's already stressing me out. I don't think we should move.
Oh, you want to stay?
Yes, stay. Let's just stay here. 2 weeks from now, we'll be broadcasting from a new facility. Fancy schmancy new studios with that new studio smell at 303 East Wacker next to the Swiss Hotel. We're on the 18th floor. Wave when you walk by. So it's going to be different, but the facility's beautiful. But as of this morning, a lot of stuff's unplugged. A lot of stuff's not plugged in.
Right. Everything's not plugged in.
Yeah. I found a place to park, which was encouraging.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's good.
Good.
Yeah, that was encouraging.
Close? Or?
Well, yeah, fairly close. In Naperville?
Yeah.
Yeah, I walked in. We have two giant lots here, and the two giant lots are completely empty.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird? A weird
looks
feeling?
Crazy, yeah.
It's like a ghost down in the parking lot.
Now, all they're trying to do here is knock down most of this building and rebuild two new ones. So they got a few more important things to worry about. But there's some inefficiencies.
True.
Yeah.
Think of the positive, though. We'll get to see the construction of an entirely new building that's added to the Chicago skyline.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. we have a busy, busy show today. Lou's coming up. You want to be Lou's first caller? 312-981-7200 is the number. You can get in line right now if you want. Pat Brady will be on later talking about the wacky end of the session in Springfield and an actual budget being approved. Rick Pearson will be on a little more of the same and some other politics. Steve Stone on the White Sox and how they get a little cranked up here. Have we won two in a row yet this year, the White Sox?
And they have, yeah. They've won three straight on, I believe, two occasions.
We'll break them up.
But not,
but
not this week, though, Steve.
It's been a rough week.
Yeah, they got the Brewers coming in.
Dean Richards later, Karen Conti on the Blago story, Doc Emmerich and Neil Greenberg on hockey, and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson on flash mobs on Michigan Avenue. How's that for a show?
Yes.
How's that going, Eric and whoever's your co-host? 6:12, let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
So apparently, the way it works is, if you were on The Apprentice, commit a felony as fast as possible, because you're a pretty good shot, you're going to get a pardon. President Trump said he's considering commuting the 14-year term of Rod Blagojevich. 2 days after the imprisoned ex-gov published an op-ed decrying his conviction as politically motivated. And an attack on everyday campaign fundraising. Blago's premise here is, hey, everybody does it. Mm-hmm. Really? Everybody tried to extort a children's hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Really? President Trump has not commuted Blagojevich's sentence yet, but Mrs. Blago Penny was on TV last night.
Yes.
And saying things like, they tried to take down the governor, and they did. Now they're trying to take down someone even bigger. So she's now on the they're going after Trump train.
Right. I know that's it's a strange turn. It's a strange about face. It absolutely is. And when he said it, Steve, he's on Air Force One, making just this flip comment. So of course everybody's it becomes then the story of the day, which it was. But holy cow, just kind of a flip comment. Yeah, they were wrong. Again, and criticizing the judge's sentencing, mm-hmm, and the sentencing guidelines, too.
And he had no knowledge of the case.
No.
Zero.
Right. None of it's true. None of what she says is true.
Officer of the pardons office said there's been no contact to the pardons office. We have a specific government entity that's set up to manage potential pardons and commutations. There's over 10,000 total in line. Mm-hmm. None of these were in line.
No. No, not at all. Martha Stewart was another name, as you said, and Dinesh D'Souza was pardoned yesterday.
And Dinesh D'Souza, Trump admits, didn't know him, saw him on TV.
Right.
That's fantastic.
And tweeted that he was going to pardon him.
Yeah, and amid all of this, CBS News is reporting that Paul Manafort is not cooperating with the special counsel because he thinks he's going to get a pardon.
Yeah. How could he get that idea?
Yeah,
by the way, I just got word a second ago, Steve, that President Trump has pardoned a bad guy from NCIS. you saw him on TV, too.
Anybody on TV.
Next. Representative Lou Lang, top deputy of Mike Madigan, mm-hmm. has resigned from several leadership posts. Remember, on Wednesday, Marianne Ahern said, 1 o'clock Thursday, there'll be a press conference. There's a new Me Too / sexual harassment / abuse of power name that's going to be mentioned tomorrow, and it's a big one. Yes. Lou Lang is a big one.
Yes, he is.
Resigning from several leadership posts after a former medical marijuana advocate accused him of retaliation, verbal abuse, and inappropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. We'll get some clarification on this from Pat Brady, probably Rick Pearson as well later. Some piece of this case are 5 years old.
Yes.
So
yes.
You would think that that would have come up before now.
I think, yes. And he's resigned as deputy majority leader, and he's also relinquished his spot on the committee. He was on the committee that investigates complaints lodged against lawmakers and staff.
Oh, that's odd.
And I guess the irony...
That's awkward.
Steve, the irony is that when we did the story, too, it was his bill where he won approval on the federal Equal Rights Amendment. less than 24 hours after that.
What's better cover than approving a 40-year-old law that didn't quite get over the hump? It's just ridiculous. Where do we put Mike Madigan on this? He looked the other way, or he's been around too long and he's not paying attention? Because it's one of those two.
Or all of the above.
Next, Illinois House passed a state budget last night. That's right, I said it. The Illinois House passed a state budget last night. But wait, there's more. Governor Rauner says he'll sign it. What?
What? You mean
the basic job that state government is supposed to do has actually been done? The one that shouldn't even be news other than a past, just a casual mention?
Steve.
They actually did it.
On time.
What? I'm a little emotional. As you probably are, too. Next. Chicago Police Lieutenant Fenner. Is it Nakia?
Nakia.
Nakia Fenner.
She's a lieutenant. Yeah.
She's married to Superintendent Eddie Johnson. She's filed a complaint with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission claiming she's a victim of the department's discriminatory promotion process. Well, Eddie Johnson's on with us later this morning, and while this is a personal matter from a family standpoint, it's also a public matter. Mm-hmm. So I've got to ask him this question.
Yeah.
What's going on, Eddie? Say, is that a little awkward at the house?
The Inspector General is looking into this, and the Tribune reporting it's not the first time the IG's office has looked into a case involving Lieutenant Fenner.
Next, comedian Samantha Bee, who you're a big fan of, I'm a big fan of, lost her mind the other night on television and said something really stupid.
I couldn't believe it.
She apologized for using a ridiculous, vulgar word to describe Ivanka Trump. Like, I don't care how much you despise the Trump family on any level. I don't care how much you think Ivanka Trump is a cheat just like her father. You're entitled to all those views. You start dropping the C word on TV, you're worse or at least as bad.
Agree.
And she was completely out of line. If they were to fire her today, they'd be completely appropriate for them to do so. As of now, TBS Turner and the appropriate networks have not made that move.
And two advertisers have dropped out too, Steve.
Right. It's just outrageous. Look, I don't know Samantha Bee. I'm a fan. But I did not see that coming.
I like her very much,
too. She toes the line and falls over the line occasionally, but not to this extent.
No, I agree.
There's no harder word in the English language than the C word.
Right.
Can we agree, though, that that is not anything like what Roseanne said?
No.
One is racist, one is...
Well, one's racist, but one is, you know, pick your offense.
I would almost
say sexist. One is racist, and there are people who think this is worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a sexist comment.
The C word is not a word you can use to describe the daughter of the President of the United States in any form.
Right.
Pick your administration. Next. All right. Let's see. Who's the best speller on this staff? Dave, you're a good speller?
I am a good speller. I was a spelling bee champ in my youth.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
I won a spelling bee in third grade.
Well, then you two are about to spell off.
Oh.
Dave, the word is
Coino, yeah.
Could you use it in a sentence?
The word is koinonia. The word is koinonia.
Word origin, please.
Koinonia. I just said it. That's the origin. Koinonia.
Koinonia. C-O-I.
All right, Andrea.
K.
Koinonia.
K.
It doesn't have two K's. Are you just using one K?
No, just one K. K-O-Y. K-O-Y.
I'm sorry.
You don't get a second chance.
See, we're going to the seventh floor now. Koinonia.
What does it even mean?
It means that it's the word koinonia.
It's probably Greek.
C-O.
Mary Vandeveld, koinonia.
K-O-Y. Steve?
Super Joe. Super Joe, spell koinonia.
Q.
U. No.
Q-U is good.
Samberg, get on a microphone. Spell koinonia.
L.
That's also incorrect. A 14-year-old from McKinney, Texas, named Karthik Nemani. Spell Nemani.
N-E-M.
Spelled koinonia correctly, bringing to end an 18-round playoff with a number two finisher. Koinonia. K-O-I-N-O-N-I-A. K-O-I-N-O-N-I-A.
Definition?
The word I just said. Koinonia. Definition? The word that won the spelling bee.
Christian fellowship or communion with God, or communion with God, or more commonly with fellow Christians.
Well, how about that? None of you heathens?
This is like a big Catholic thing. Right. I should have heard of that.
Well, you know, it makes sense because ecogenia means family in Greek. So this, perhaps the
totally
last portion.
Steve, you want to take another crack at koinonia?
K-O-Y.
Is it Laurel?
O-N-I-A.
Is it Air Yanny? Is it Laurel or Yanny?
I heard Yanny.
I did too.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Got a couple of texters who have decided that I'm a racist. Let me explain something to you. The Roseanne tweet is inexcusable. She absolutely deserved to be fired. I personally am more offended by that than the C word. My point about Samantha Bee is you don't get to choose what is offensive. Racists can decide what's offensive the same way as other people can. And in the world of scorecards of television broadcasting, this is what I'm talking about. The C word has as much weight as something as horrific as what Roseanne did.
Yes.
I like Samantha Bee. I like her very much. But she went over the line.
I completely agree with you, Steve.
All right. I'll get back to my racist points later. Now you...
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
6:27, and Lou Manfredini standing by with Rosemary from Albany Park will be our first caller. Good morning, Lou.
I thought Rosemary was here. I was like, there's nobody named Rosemary.
There's Rosemary. She's right behind you. Oh. Turn around. Say hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I love the name Rosemary.
What are you doing this weekend, Lou?
What am I doing this weekend? We have a busy weekend. My son is, our youngest son is, you know, he's an actor. And he's in a community theater thing. So he's got rehearsal all weekend long. And so we're kind of sticking around and doing family stuff.
Somebody asked me this week, they go, does Lou do stuff around his own house on the weekend? Oh. See, because you know how there's like people have had this experience, I'm sure, where you go to a therapist and the therapist's personal life is a mess.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a mechanic and the car is never fixed at his own house. Lou, you take care of stuff at the house, don't you?
You know everybody has a little bit of OCD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has it. For me, it's always the stuff around the house. So yesterday, we had a dishwasher go out.
Oh, boy.
And so I swapped out the dishwasher.
With what? One you had in the back?
Well, ironically, I did.
Mr. Manfredini, you wait right here. I'm going to see what we have in the storeroom.
This is a long story, but we are fortunate enough to have a second home in southeastern Wisconsin.
Sure.
We spend a lot of time. And about a year ago, on Thanksgiving, the dishwasher went on kaputs. On Thanksgiving.
That's bad.
So I ran out and bought an inexpensive one just to get us through the thing. Popped it in Thanksgiving weekend, right? Bang, bang. That one went on the fritz because here's the rule number one. Don't buy cheap appliances.
You get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for.
Right.
Well, when we remodeled our kitchen in Chicago in the fall, which we had planned for years, we had a pretty good dishwasher that I'm like, let's hang on to this just in case. Well, the just in case happened.
There you go.
So yesterday I swapped out a dishwasher, which actually went swimmingly well. But yes, I do things around the home.
Are you like a pit crew when you swap out a dishwasher? Can you do it in 18 seconds?
Well, I have a jumpsuit that I put on.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, and I sponsor it, I have the Chevy logo on one side,
right.
Permaseal on
right,
the other, Ace Hardware. You know, it's I put the logos on there,
yeah,
and then I take pictures of
you
myself
never know
and
who's
I post
gonna,
them.
You know, unless you never know who's going to wander into your kitchen.
Exactly.
A lot of impressions.
Right.
All right, let's go to Rosemary. Rosemary's in Albany Park. What are your troubles, Rosemary?
Oh, I have a lot of trouble. I have two pressing problems. One that's been bothering me for about 10 years. I'm the sacristan at a church well known to Lou. And every Saturday, one of my jobs is to change the holy water.
Mm-hmm.
And the holy water is kept in stainless steel bowls. And every week there is a white film that forms around the top of the water in the bowls, and I can't get that out. And I've tried abrasive things, and it damages.
This is fascinating to me, Rosemary. Have you heard of this before, Lou?
No.
The dog has a question as well, but we'll do that as a follow-up.
Do we keep the stainless steel? Is it covered? When you put the water is blessed?
No.
Yeah. So we probably need to keep that covered because it's a reaction with the water and the dust that's probably in the air. And so a little saran wrap or something over the top would probably help. As far as removing the calcium deposits on the stainless steel, your best bet probably is to use something like a CLR and a Scotch-Brite pad. Do that once to really get it clean. And then the water that gets put in there and blessed, then covered with saran wrap, because it's probably organic material that's in the air. In old churches, there's a lot of dust that blows around, and that's what's forming on top of that water.
Well, have you ever had a holy water question before?
No, that would be a good one.
How about that?
Yeah. I get, people say, what's the oddest question or, you know, most unique question you've ever had? That's a good one. That and the woman who had the squirrel peeing in her house through the screen.
By the way, those like the Samantha Bee thing are completely different.
Right.
You get an April Air Wi-Fi thermostat allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone from American Weathermakers, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. That is for Rosemary. Let me check the textures here quick. Lou, are automatic outdoor awnings worth it? My quote was about 5G.
Yeah, I think that these retractable awnings, in particular that have the wind sensor on them already, are really can change the whole use of your patio. If you've got an area that just gets a lot of sun, but you like that open air look, these awnings are beautiful. They come out, will give you this beautiful shade. It's really quite lovely. And then if it gets really windy, they retract automatically because inevitably, you know, you go to bed or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's too windy, and it rips off the side of your house. They automatically close.
So you think so, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Lou, I've heard you talk about regular ants, but how do you get rid of carpenter ants inside your home? Well, you take away the tool belts, right?
Carpenter ants, people sometimes they think that, again, I'm not an entomologist, but you can't just look at an ant unless you're a professional and say that's a carpenter ant. Just because it's big doesn't mean that it's a carpenter ant.
Can you question it?
You could.
Yeah.
I suppose you could.
With a tiny swinging light over its head.
Right.
What are you?
Tell me right now. But the same tiny ants, the ant baits that I talk about, the Bonide Revenge, the Taro ant bait stations, those will also work for larger ants that could be carpenter ants. The other thing, too, because it's been so moist with ants, this is a big problem now, there are these powders and shakes that you can put around the perimeter of your home. That is absolutely a must because they're coming in from outside, and they're coming in through tiny little, you know, cracks and fissures in your foundation. I would sprinkle that ant powder around the perimeter of your home and then use the bait stations inside.
And by the way, that Taro stuff you mentioned works like a charm.
It's great.
But don't wait around to watch it work because it's a parade of ants that go into that
thing. Right?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They tell everybody, hey, everybody, come over here.
Yeah, it's like a horror movie in my head.
Yeah.
All right, listen, nice job by you as always. Are you on the radio tomorrow?
I am, from 7 to 10 a.m. on WGN Radio. And what studio? I get all these emails. We have working studios, obviously. You're on the air.
We are still in the Showcase studio where you will be broadcasting from tomorrow.
Got it.
All right. Think.
We think.
And enjoy it. Enjoy
unless
it.
You get a note later
unless
on tonight.
I get an email later. No. You're going to be at the tea place.
There's really a sense. There's really a sense in the building of the building closing in on us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like everybody's gone, but the newspaper on the third floor and us.
I have a little guilt because I got to be honest with you. I don't have a lot of like sentimental leaving the Tribune Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Oh, that's absolutely. Okay.
Lindsay says I need to listen to more Taylor Swift music.
You can do it this weekend.
Really? To soften up my heart.
Really?
She said.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
She's in town.
Ooh, look what you made me do.
The majority of the life of this radio station was spent here, but from 1980, or I should say from the 60s, I guess,
right?
Through about 86,
right.
Bradley Place?
Right. Yes.
Maybe the 50s for that matter.
But here's my thing, right? That radio station, and you and I have been there, Dave, you've been there a long time, mm-hmm. Andrea, we've all been there a long time.
Yeah.
It's the people that are on the microphone that matter.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter where we are.
Yep. Great point.
And so that, to me, it's like, look, the people in the core of this place, it doesn't matter if we're on Wacker or Lower Wacker.
Right.
I'll probably be on Lower Wacker.
No, you
won't. But, you know.
You're right.
It's hey, it's a nice place, and I get the history, but WGN's going to be just as good as it is when we walk across the street.
And for the record, I'd like this to go into the official record. We would have stayed if not for the gouging rent that the new landlords tried to extort from us.
Don't look behind you right now, Steve.
Yeah. You're right.
I'm serious. Don't look
back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
You know how this works. I walk down the street and people go, Bruno? I go, no, Steve. You know, we moved this in. 646 now. And in studio. Listen, there's internships. And then there's super internships.
Yeah.
There's programs for the summer. And then there's programs that can change your life and set you off on a path that can really change the world. And that's what we're talking about. So when I heard about these people, we had to have them in, very simply. Let me introduce to you Charles Johnson, FH Passion Community Strategist, and Antonia Winfrey, FH Passion Project Manager and Scholar Manager. First, explain what passion is. Either one of you, jump in.
FH Passion is a general construction company based out of the city of Chicago. We have a couple other locations as well.
So you guys do all sorts of engineering projects?
Construction projects.
Give me something you build recently or are working on now.
I have worked on CTA 95th Street Terminal Improvement Projects.
It's big stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, it's significant. Charles? Well, Charles, let me get a microphone. That might help.
Houston, actually, one of the major projects we did was the new American Airlines Stinger project at O'Hare.
Okay, so these are significant big deals.
Huge infrastructure.
And these are the kind of things where you probably don't want to bring Timmy in from school and just go, Timmy, take this one over. We're taking the afternoon off. So how do you get involved with schools where you're teaching these kids not just science, technology, and math and engineering, but teaching them how to develop a career and maybe keep them in the company?
Yeah, I think, with Westinghouse in particular, back in 2015, we were approached by the city of Chicago and CPS. The city and the school district wanted to create opportunities to expose young people to the engineering field. Westinghouse is a STEM school, basically a selective enrollment school in the west side of Chicago. And as a major contractor here in the city, the program was designed not only to give them the hard skills, but also the soft skills, all the tenacity, the pride, the hard work that goes along with.
Well, the subtleties, right? Not just the engineering, but the subtleties as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All the soft stuff as well.
Antonia, you're in charge of these kids?
Yes.
Okay, what age range are we talking about? They all 18-year-olds?
No, we receive students that are freshmen.
Oh, no
kidding.
And
we take them through the 3-year program. So we take 6 students every year. Currently, we have we inducted the new 6, so we have a full set of 17 students currently.
So once they're done with the program, what are they ready for?
They're ready to go to college, hopefully.
So they're ready, but I would assume, as far as entrance to college, this opens up doors they wouldn't otherwise have open, right?
Absolutely. It's a view behind the green curtain.
Right, that exactly.
It's fantastic.
That was my favorite Tom Hanks movie, The Green Curtain.
Right. The projects, as you mentioned, too, that they're working on, the Red Line, the Ped Bridge over Lakeshore Drive, those are big projects. Kind of walk us through. They don't just show up at the site. They have to kind of start. Do they start in the classroom? Or kind of walk us through the project, because it seems as though this would be the final step, is working on one of these projects.
Yes. The final step for them would definitely be to try to get them a full internship where they're working with a project team. One of the things that we do for their first year is try to give them a bite-sized view of what we do. So we have them design a project. They have to come up with a design. They come up with the cost. They execute the work. All throughout, I'm making sure that they're working safely. And then we have a test where they're making sure that they stayed within budget.
Wow.
Oh, budget.
And that's no small feat to do a budget while you're doing a design, right, too.
And then the entire Passion family comes out and judges them as well.
Oh, wow.
So...
So, and Charles,
put them through the ringer.
Yeah.
Well, and the pressure is high, but it's a big program, and you're only taking a few kids, so they have to earn it. So,
oh, absolutely.
As community manager, are you part of the team that decides where these kids come from?
Well actually, we have several different partnerships across the city. So, as Passion and a community, a person designed to create access for everyone, we have a wide range of different programs, not only with Westinghouse, but with Dunbar High School on the south side as well.
How do these kids apply? I mean, is it made known to them in school that this is a possibility?
Yes. At Westinghouse, we have a presentation where we reintroduce ourselves. It's called the PIE presentation, Passions and Innovations in Engineering, where we present who we are as a company and present an idea of engineering. During that time, we open up the area for the company for... Sorry.
Norman. No, listen.
We open up the application process. For the application process, last year we had about 22 students apply. And from those 22 students, we interviewed and had a group project with about 16 of those students. And then we selected the group of six from that.
It's got to be hard to eliminate the other kids.
I mean, most of these kids are...
Because they all deserve to be there.
And they're high achievers. You know,
right.
Most of these kids index, high in both math and science.
Sure. I mean,
these are, some of the brightest kids and brightest minds there in the city.
Well, what a good process for them to go through.
I was just going
to
say, what an interesting dynamic. You're competing against each other. Then once you select the top six, then they immediately start working together, right? And they have to learn how to work together as a group on budget and infrastructure.
And it's the last time they'll ever hit a budget.
Some of them haven't.
Oh, they haven't. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm sure you're working with them on that. Stick around for a second. More in a moment.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right.
Charles Johnson is here, FH Passion Community Strategist, and
you do it. Antonia Winfrey.
Antonia Winfrey. You have no idea. Once you do this, once you get something in your head that's an incorrect pronunciation, your brain starts to fight with each side.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize.
Thank you.
My real name is Eva. But I respect the fact that you brought that up, because why go through the day with people mispronouncing your name, right?
I typically go with a W.
Right. That's easier.
That's cool.
FH Passion Project Manager and Scholar Manager. Right, we're talking about CPS students. We're getting an incredible opportunity here with your company to get a jump start on their college education and their future life as engineers. And yesterday, you had your big hard hat ceremony. Is that right, Charles?
No,
turn your microphone on. You know what? I've already moved.
Yeah.
I've already
right.
moved down the street.
Mentally.
What happened at the hard hat ceremony?
Well, last night we inducted our new class of incoming sophomores that will start the FH Passion Scholar Program. What was exciting about it, actually, was that their parents were there and siblings. So it was a family affair last night. And these are the young folks who will begin their program, who worked real hard, who applied, who went through the rigorous interview process that we talked about earlier. And what was special about it was the third-year students were able to kind of top them off and put the hard hats on them.
That's cool.
Pass the baton.
That's very cool.
They passed the baton.
That is super cool. It's such an esteemed program. Is there a way now, can you reach out, can they reach out once they've finished and they've gone through the ceremony to certain colleges? I mean, because this would be something you'd put on a resume. But since they're students, would this help them get admitted to certain colleges, maybe engineering schools? I know U of I is a big engineering program. Could they maybe, you know, use this as a way to forge ahead to get into a big engineering college?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the real life experience, the on site experience, the in office experience that they're getting hands on will add to the quality of their education and then allow them to be a lot more competitive and seeking college opportunities.
Why are more companies doing this?
I think that what we started back in 2015, now we were recently invited in the city. CPS is actually working on expanding the program. So
and not just in engineering. I mean, there's companies should be doing this in every field.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that it's a huge opportunity to create the workforce for tomorrow.
This should be a class. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you have home ec or you have science. This should be, you know, for students who want to pursue this field, this should be almost, you know, an elective in school for every school.
Mandatory.
Yeah.
Mandatory.
Especially with the budget part.
Because the benefits are not just to the kids. The benefits are to the rest of us when these kids go on and, you know, develop projects that we all need.
Yeah. And we say at the office over at Passion that it's very difficult for any young person to be something that they've never seen before.
Can we maybe have these kids make me a bridge? I'd like a new bridge. Maybe a bridge at the house. You know,
in the backyard?
Backyard bridge. Yeah. Why not? Well, I have nothing but respect for this program, and I was excited to see that you guys are willing to get up at this hour and come in, so I appreciate it very much. What do we need from, or what does the community need? What does Passion need from the community to help this program?
Yeah. When we look at it, I think that we need more companies to do what we're doing.
Step up.
To step up. Give our young people opportunity. Give them exposure. And then on the other side is, you know, we need total community involvement. We need parents to be involved. We need kids to want to do it. We need teachers to, you know, embrace. And then we need great leadership like we have over at Westinghouse that really embraces the program. And, you know, this thing.
A good principal and great parents help.
Great principal, great parents. And on the corporate side, you know, leaders who really get it and who get it from the top down.
So if there's company big shots driving into work now and they want to know how you guys got this done, can they call you or email you or what do they do?
Yeah, sure. I think that what we have is a working model. Everything that we do is on our website at fhpassion.com. And feel free to drop an inquiry there for us, and we'll be more than happy to share our learning and best practice.
And my new pal, AW. These kids, I mean, it's got to be kind of emotional for you because, you know, you go through the whole deal with them, right?
Yes. I was just talking with the principal yesterday, and we were talking about how the freshmen that we had years ago are going to be graduating very soon.
How about that?
Yeah. I remember.
What a cool thing when they come back and go, I wouldn't have this shot without you, right?
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure.
And it's regardless of if they get into construction or not. They are excellent students and excellent individuals as well.
Good people, first and foremost. You want to name your favorite kid so far by name?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All of them.
Yes.
Except that one kid.
I'll name that one.
Great to see you both. What's the website again?
The website is www.fhpassion.com.
And that's P-A-S-C-H-E-N.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to try to find my tongue, put it back in my mouth so I can actually do the rest of the show.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It's 7:13 now. Hi to Justin Kaufman, who had a show last night but doesn't tonight. How are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
Thanks for getting up.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
You get to Rick Pearson in just a second.
Steve. Morning, Justin.
Morning, Justin.
It's a great story out of Keene, Texas. Keene, Texas, where kindergarten students at a Texas elementary school start every day by picking one kid, mm-hmm. and the one kid, these are five-year-olds, basically, and the one kid shakes everybody's hand in class, has to look them in the eye, and wish them a good morning.
I'm sorry, I didn't shake your hand earlier.
No, it's fine, it's fine. I'll send you back to kindergarten so you know what to do.
I got a hug.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah, see?
Some of these kids do hug, and some of these kids shake hands, but they're all learning how to greet each other, get their faces out of screens, look each other in the eye, and all the kids love it. They say it's their favorite part of school, and they can't wait to be picked, so it's their day.
Aww.
Isn't that a cool story?
It is a cool story. The germaphobe in me just thinks of all the snot.
Okay, but see, here's the
thing. So much snot.
Here's the thing.
I sort of thought that, too.
You don't turn into a freaky adult when you're five.
Right.
When you're five, you're just a human being.
No, I understand, but just think about how much nose wiping there's been done in the hallway before those kids.
Well, I wasn't until you brought it up. So here's my thought.
Yeah.
Well, first off, you're going to need some ID. I want to send you today... Maybe over to the train station, like over to Union Station.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Sure.
It's a good idea.
To greet people coming in and to wish them a good day.
Right.
Okay, so you're going to... I love
it. At least it's not 100 today, Justin.
But you're going to need some ID, something to identify you as an official member of WGN and the Steve Cochran Show.
Right.
Steph here.
Nice.
So I found an original WGN Walgreens cap with the old logo on it.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
This is my gift to you. This has only been worn by my grandmother on Sundays on her way to church.
Someone just cleaned out his office.
So, how'd you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
All right.
So, you'll be able to wear that. So,
the assignment? From assignment editor Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the train station.
Well, I think the train station. Where else would you want to go?
It's good. Like I said, the germaphobe in me thinks about the experience.
Maybe wear one rubber glove.
Maybe do some hugging as well.
Yeah, if they want a hug, offer them a handshake or a hug. It's their choice.
I'm going to go find there's a new thing. I saw this at the Ogilvie train station. The new McDonald's headquarters is now in the West Loop.
Oh, I drove past that the other day. It's a beautiful
building.
They have a
shuttle service from the train stations where they get on the McDonald's shuttle and you can go to the office and then back to the train station. So I'll stand next to the person who has a sign for the McDonald's shuttle.
That's a great
idea. It seems like warm. It's a warmer way to do it than me just bum-rushing people getting off the train.
Well, we also have the Steve Cochran Show sign in the window here. You feel free to take that with you and hold it.
And if you're going to the McDonald's, why don't you just go to the McDonald's headquarters and bring us back some of those Japanese McNuggets?
Japanese McNugget.
Oh, wow.
All right, let's do this. I'd do this.
All right. So, but stick around, because Rick Pearson is going to join us next. After we finish with Rick, get out. But stick around for now.
The outbound Eden still a mess because of this ramp closure at Willow involving an overturned tractor trailer filled with beer. So crews are on the scene trying to figure out how to offload that
beer.
Hey, Mary, where's that beer spill? We're asking for a friend.
And enjoy your grand prize, a lifetime supply of Duff beer.
Ah, just took it to my veins!
Right now we are rushing a truck of pretzels.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Dave missed three important meetings after the show yesterday as he was rushing out to the beer truck spill.
I did see it, though. I did pass it.
Oh, you just went by that way? Just coincidentally?
Yeah, I don't live anywhere near
it. It was on the way to Champagne, but that's okay.
If the beer truck spilled on the way to Champagne?
I didn't even try that. That wasn't even on purpose.
Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America, at Rep30 on Twitter and all over social media. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I think maybe that beer spill might have urged legislators to try to get home to Chicago.
How about that? By the way, Justin Coffin's here with us this morning. You know,
yeah, I'm wondering if he's such a germaphobe, he's really going to wear that hat?
I'm not going to wear the hat, but yes.
That hat has never been worn. Never been worn.
Slightly worn.
No, never been worn. I'm telling you, it's never been worn. So here's the, because it doesn't fit my head, that's why it's never been worn. So here's the deal. Rick, you and I come from a time in American history when basic standard operating procedure for a government was to just come up with a budget. Just do a budget. And it would be mentioned in the news in passing that the budget was passed. It's now become rarer than an appearance of Halley's Comet in Illinois. And yet they did it this week like LeBron James shooting a free throw. It was like no big deal. Why?
Doesn't it say something about Illinois politics that when you're in an election year, we actually return to somewhat of a slight stage of normalcy for once?
Ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it was obvious from Governor Rauner on down to both sides in the legislature that after that two-year budget impasse, which ended in kind of a mini revolt by Republicans a year ago, no one wanted to see any of those kinds of disputes carry over. No one wanted to see another budget impasse that would impact social services or some of the state institutions, many of those located in downstate communities, which are predominantly Republican, and our employ people that Rauner wants to vote for him for a re-election in November. So you did have this kind of meeting of the minds, a mini kumbaya moment, and everybody talked about how this is the way it should be. This is the way it's supposed to be. And indeed, it is the way it's supposed to be. But having said that, and despite this perhaps, I would say, very short-lived truce, the re-election campaign start today.
Rick, I'm just intrigued because, yes, it's positive news to get a budget passed, but once again, Moody's today talking about this isn't, they're not impressed by this. There's way too much debt in this budget. There's 30% of the budget is debt repayment and pension payouts. Talk about that, because it is definitely a great story that they did their job, but it's still not a great budget.
Well, I would call it a maintenance budget, and indeed it's counted on a number of things that are of questionable validity. There's about $450 million estimated in pension savings, but that would come through annuitants or future pensioners in the $130 billion debt-ridden pension system. That would come from them choosing to opt for getting 60% buyout of their future pension funds. And it's uncertain how many people are going to take that. They've modeled it off a similar plan in Missouri, but Missouri doesn't have the same pension guarantees that the Illinois Constitution has.
Has that been offered before? Has that been offered before at this level?
No, it has not.
So we have no idea if anybody will buy in, let alone 60%.
Correct.
Right.
Well, 22% will buy in to get 60% of what their estimated earnings would be. That's part of this deal.
And so you told me there'd be no math in this segment,
right, Rick? What was the difference in this year? I don't want to be the black sheep here, but what was different about this year? Why did was there a kumbaya moment beforehand? But there's no hoopla. There's no arguing. There's no stretching this out. There's no stopgap budget. What was different this time?
Well, I think over the last several weeks, it became apparent that one coming from the governor's office after a bruising primary that he barely won, he didn't want to see Republicans cross him. And so I think he and they settled together on a plan to actually work to try to get a budget. At the same time, Democrats, who control the General Assembly and saw the damage that the impasse did to social service agencies and healthcare funding, they didn't want to go through a protracted, involved process either, that the political stakes were too high and that, frankly, constituent anger would be too much. Both sides would get the blame. There wouldn't be any victor. So this is kind of a shared moment, as it were, in getting this done.
So the rest of the story yesterday involved two people, both prominent, one more so than the other. One is Rod Blagojevich. You might have heard of him, Rick. He's in prison.
Yes.
And President Trump yesterday got really upset about Rod Blagojevich's 18-year sentence, error number one,
right.
Really thought something should be done about it. In a longer conversation about Dinesh D'Souza and Martha Stewart and other people that have been on TV that he's seen. So is this going to happen?
I would expect it to happen because he talked about it. And these tend to be things like bright, shiny objects. Take a look over here. He was wrong about the sentencing of Blagojevich. It was 14 years, not 18 years. He talked about making stupid comments about selling the U.S. Senate seat and showing off bravado. Well, people should be reminded, too, there were other parts of this conviction that included trying to shake down a children's hospital for contributions, trying to shake down the horse racing industry for contributions.
Stuff you go to prison for.
Well, yeah, that's the kind of thing. And he could have been sentenced to 30 years. Okay. So here you have Blagojevich, a former who formerly appeared on Celebrity Apprentice and was quickly fired over his inability to use email. Here is another kind of celebrity. Here's another person who was prosecuted by somebody who was close to James Comey, who was close to Robert Mueller. And you start chipping away at these prosecutions. Patrick Fitzgerald, who prosecuted Blagojevich, also prosecuted Scooter Libby, who was granted a pardon. You start connecting these dots, and Trump's belief of this great deep state in the that exists in the Department of Justice and the FBI, and it looks like an attack on the institution of the Department of Justice and the FBI.
See, I don't give him even that much credit, because I think even in his twisted way of viewing things, he doesn't believe there's a deep state. He believes that deep state is a word and a phrase he can use to try to further the Donald Trump daily agenda. So is this the secret message to guys like Michael Cohen that, hey, I got your back? Is this why we're hearing Paul Manafort's not cooperating anymore? Is that what's happening here?
I think that's part of it, that you know, pardons are available. I think it's also, too, to cast further doubt on the prosecutorial skills of Bob Mueller and the people that he has worked with in the past. It's kind of I do believe there's a question about trying to weaken weaken the Mueller investigation, but by weakening Mueller by associating him with people like Patrick Fitzgerald and others, and claiming that prosecutions were wrongfully done.
Last word, Andrea.
Well, if you
believe that he...
See, yeah.
So you still believe 14 years is too much.
I thought 14 years...
So do you want him out?
No. No, okay. And what frustrates me, too, is pardon is a pardon. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that means that the entire process, Rick, you covered this trial, I covered this trial, like the entire process of going through the court system from the main level, from the trial level, all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court is being questioned, and that's what really bothers me. So if he's going to do something, maybe commuting the sentence or early release or something like that, but a full pardon, I think, throws our entire judicial system into
upheaval.
Yeah,
you have to remember that. The U.S. Supreme Court denied to
twice.
Oh, what do they know?
Right, twice.
It's just the Supreme Court.
And the irony, too, only a president can give a federal pardon. If he was charged at a state level, he couldn't do that. That'd be up to the governor or the state pardon board.
I hate to break it to anybody, but this has nothing to do with Rod Blagojevich. It has everything to do with Donald Trump.
I know.
Trump.
All right.
But
so I'll ask about the mayor's race.
can I tell you a quick Joel Quinville Blagojevich story?
Yeah. Well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
I almost think I heard you say Joel Quenneville, Rod Blagojevich, because John McDonough just ran into a guardrail. All right, what do you got?
Now, it's harmless. During one of the Blackhawks conventions, I went over to Coach Q and introduced myself as from the Tribune, and he says, "So, what do you think?" This was before Blagojevich was sentenced, and he goes, "So, what do you think that Blagojevich feller is going to get?" And I said, "Well, George Ryan got 6.5 years. Rod Blagojevich ran for office. He was going to clean up the corruption. Here's what he did. I say he gets double. I think he gets 13. Quinville turns to me and goes, "You know, I never met the man who made a book on prison sentences before."
That's great.
Prison bookie. Great political writer.
I'm taking 2-1 on that.
At Rap 30, Rick Pearson. And by the way, Rick, if you're going by the Ogilvy train station for any reason this morning, Justin's going to be out there hugging people.
Oh, no.
I will stay away.
All right, good. thank you, buddy. And you know, you can hear Rick on Sunday morning. The Sunday Spin starting at 7. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Listen to Pat Brady. Listen to Pat Brady. He's really going to blow your mind because he's seldom wrong, just right. Yeah. Listen to Pat Brady.
743. That's the music stylings of John DeCoste. Pat Brady's on the phone. He's been in Springfield for, like a month. And he was just freed yesterday after a miraculous thing happened. We got a budget. Who do you credit the budget success with? Who was the leader that got it done?
I think there are a lot of leaders. I think Jim Durkin, Tom Demmer, and on the Republican side, I think on the other side, Senator Tillerson, Bill Brady, and the budgeteers. There were a lot of people that participated in this. Speaker Madigan, So I think there are a lot of people that participated in it. I was listening to the Pearson segment, and he summed it up pretty well. I think democracy actually works when people get engaged, and I think most legislators heard over the last 2 years that they don't want any more budget impasses. They want the government to work, and both sides heard it. It wasn't just the governor. It was the Democrats, too. So that was a great, it was a great session.
It just goes to show how ridiculous the two-year no-budget situation was.
Yeah, and I mean, there are arguments on either side. The governor wanted his reform agenda items implemented that he ran on, and Speaker Madigan didn't. So it was the two titans that fought it out. And I think we'll continue to fight that out. But and Pearson also mentioned, too, which I think is the right point, the reelection campaign starts today. And I think, and obviously I'm a Republican, but I do believe Governor Rauner came out of this pretty well, because the Democrats now are running on, we're going to raise your taxes and we're not going to reform government. And Governor Rauner is going to be running on a reform agenda. And I think right now in this state, nobody wants a tax increase, and people recognize this state government needs to operate differently, or we're going to have this battle every year.
Yeah, and I've said it since I started yakking, and that is that there is nothing the governor asked for that was not doable and would not have made the state better. So I don't care if you like Rauner or not, his reform agenda was perfectly appropriate, and the fact that none of it would be taken up in the House is just a testament to what a blockade artist Mike Madigan is.
Yeah, and that's going to be the debate here the next, 4.5, 5 months, and we're going to have a big campaign in November, and it's going to be the future of the state. Do you want more of the same, or do you want to continue working on these reform items? And we'll see. Governor Rauner's got an uphill climb right now, but it's going to be quite an election.
Andrea wants to bring up a little something that came up yesterday afternoon, I think.
Yeah, Pat, wanted to ask you about Liu Ling. What happens now? I know these are just allegations, but he's already stepped down as the deputy majority leader and given up the spot on, ironically, the committee that investigates complaints lodged against lawmakers and staff. So what,
just can't make it
what
up.
Happens to Liu Ling now?
Yeah, you can't make it up. And I watched the press conference twice. Yeah. What will happen is, he stepped down from his role, so that kind of takes it out of the media for a while. And hopefully it'll go through the inspector general process, the legislative inspector general process, which has been a problem in the past. But I do believe they made reforms to that, and there's been enough light to shine upon it right now that people are watching it. So it'll go through that process, and they'll make a determination like they did for the other young woman that was standing up there on the Ira Silverstein matter. So it'll go through the process.
Look, I'm not defending Liu Lang at all. I don't know the woman involved in this at all. But it seems this to me that if we can all accept the basic premise here, that no woman should be subject to sexual harassment or abuse of power or have their job be a condition of cooperation in either. I'm going to allow you to abuse your power and use it against me and threaten me and blackmail me,
right,
or I'm going to engage in some sort of sexual activity with you or put up with your passes. None of that's acceptable.
Right.
We know the line. Having said that, do I have the facts right here that it was 5 years ago that this happened, and isn't there any other place this woman could have gone?
Well, she made some very inflammatory allegations about these folks taking a bribe, a $170 million bribe in exchange for some of the things to do with medical marijuana, I believe. But then when asked the question, why didn't you go to the U.S. Attorney's Office? Why didn't you go to the FBI? Do you have any documents to support this? She said, no, these were things that happened 5 years ago. So, and Steve, I completely agree with your introduction there on all the things you said about we all should be concerned about this and it's unacceptable. But when you get up and make allegations, I do think at some level you have an obligation to get your facts straight or have facts that support the allegations that you're making. These things ruin lives.
Right. And I'm the last person that's going to defend Mike Madigan or anybody in Mike Madigan's circle, but it comes back to Mike Madigan again here. Is this something that he missed, or is this something that he's been around too long and wasn't paying attention to?
I think the buzz in Springfield, I think kind of the proper analysis is, for all his political genius, maybe it's because he's been there too long, maybe it's just his age, he's not in tune with it, but he completely missed the mark on the impact of this Me Too movement and these allegations. I mean, the first ones should have been the ones that go back to the Elena Hampton, the woman that made the allegations against his campaign committees, and the way that his lawyer handled that, brushing her off, to me just shows he was so out of tune with what's going on in this country in the Me Too movement.
One more
Rod Blagojevich, will he be... sorry, Pat. I'm sorry. You guys saved the best for last.
Oh, my God. I spent the entire evening last night gluing my head back together.
Oh, God. I know. I know. And the announcement, too. In fact, we were up in the newsroom, and Bertrand said, wait a minute. He just made an offhand statement on Air Force One to a gaggle of reporters about pardoning Rod Blagojevich. Did I hear that right? We're on the tape. Went back. Yep.
Well, Pat, start with this. From your prosecutorial standpoint, what's the difference between a commutation and a pardon?
Commutation is your jail sentence is done. You've served enough time, you're out. It's not a pardon. A pardon is, it never happened, like Andrea mentioned before. So, but right. the quirk in the law in Illinois is, in either event, Rod can run for statewide office again. He can't run for municipal office, but he can run for statewide office again. But, you know, as always, Pearson gave a perfect analysis, I think, of the Trump's motivations, and then you added in on just Trump in general. But here's something to think about that maybe no one's really talking about. This is supposed to be for curing miscarriages of justice and things like that. I can give you right now, there's probably thousands of kids of color sitting in prison for the rest of their lives because of the stupid drug laws we had in the 90s. And they're never going to get out of prison, and they can't write a letter to the Wall Street Journal. And for the president, to, in my opinion, to abuse this process for some goofy motive that he knows the guy or he doesn't like the way that Pat Fitzgerald or James Comey treated him, to me it's just such a miscarriage of justice. It's so unfair to this country and the people that are sitting in prisons that probably deserve to get out.
Isn't that abuse of power?
Well, you know, I actually went back, believe it or not, Steve, I was back reading the Federalist Papers last night.
You know how to have a good time.
Oh, I know. My blood pressure, which is usually pretty low, my face was just red when I heard this stuff. But he has very broad powers under Article 2, but the founders were very concerned about creating a king and someone that could impeach people pardon people like Trump's doing, and they put a provision in the Constitution that you can't pardon yourself from impeachment. So he has broad power, so I can't say it's an abuse of power, but it's never in my lifetime, or even I think the history of the country, been used the way Donald Trump uses it.
Right. Pat Brady, thank you for all that. Congratulations on escaping Springfield, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, Pat.
Pat was on with our friend Lourdes yesterday, too.
I hope he's
I think
okay.
It was not with Micah, but he saw Lourdes at Channel 9.
Okay. Yeah, I did see that.
And then Lourdes said she was going to come by sometime, and we all know that's not true. Yeah.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
756, just like the little kid in Keene, Texas, and all the little kids in the elementary school start every day with a hug or a handshake of their classmates. I sent Justin Kaufman to the Ogilvie train station to handshake and hug tourists. Then regular folks just coming to work. How's it going?
It's going. How you doing? Go ahead and give me a handshake. Hey, how you doing? Welcome to June, guys. Don't be rude.
June.
All right. Welcome to Chicago. You're here. There's a kindergartner in Texas that they shake hands.
How about you just simplify it and say here's a hug, good morning, or a handshake from the Steve Cochran Show. How about that?
I almost got punched. Hey, would you like a handshake or a hug from the Steve Cochran Show? From the Steve Cochran Show. There we go. My first one.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
There you go. I say your name, Steve. Everybody goes crazy here.
All right. So where exactly are you?
I am standing at the Ogilvie train station. They just are deboarding or detraining.
Deplaning.
Deplaning. And how you doing? They're just this one's coming in, I think, from Aurora. How you doing?
All right, so here's the deal.
Steve People Cochran Show want to give you a hug and a handshake. No,
he's really taking this assignment seriously.
I want to give you a handshake. Want a hug too? They do this in Texas.
I don't think
they do it in kindergarten.
I don't think the Texas or the kindergarten piece are helping you. So
they are rude.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the deal: the people on a train headed for Ogilvie. Justin Kaufman is standing there. He's in a blue blazer and a WGN hat.
Blue blazer, I got the hat.
Give him a handshake or a hug.
Nice to meet you from the Steve Cochran Show. Welcome to June.
Hey, keep going. I don't know. Welcome to June.
welcome to
He's the
June
official ambassador
first.
Of June.
Yes, say rabbit, rabbit, rabbit.
That's fantastic.
Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. That'd be funny.
But Bob Collins really scared that idiot, didn't he?
Yeah, but nobody will get it, so it'll be funny.
7:58. Our friend Kira Conti's here. We're following up on the Blagojevich discussion because I assume you're all over television this morning talking about it.
I am. I wouldn't be wearing this much makeup otherwise.
You look fabulous.
Thank you.
All right, so a couple of basics here. The Supreme Court said no to Rod Blagojevich twice, I believe. It seems like they know the law, yet the president can still execute the powers of the pardon, or it's supposed to commute this sentence. There is a pardon office which had pardons in line, commutation applications in line that he didn't consult. Is he going to do it? Question A. Question B, should he do it?
I think he's going to do it, and I guess I'm a little cynical, but I think the Blagojevich people played him. I think the idea was that this is a guy who just did that op-ed and was at the Washington Post, mm-hmm. in which he said, you know, if the government doesn't have a case against you, they'll just create one. Well, guess who thinks that that's the way it is? Donald Trump.
Right.
So this appeals to him, okay? And this appeals to him for a couple of other reasons. I don't know if you talked to this with your prior guest, but Martha Stewart, who is also on the table to be pardoned, was prosecuted by guess who? Jim Comey. So, and Blagojevich, I mean, it was prosecuted by our Patrick Fitzgerald, who was friends with Comey. So I guess I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory here going.
You're not the only one.
That Trump is, you know, Trump does not like Obama. Trump wants to hurt people who have hurt him. That's part of that narcissistic personality. And I think this is his way of thumbing his nose at the prosecution.
So he can do this. Should he do this?
You know, I think he should, because 6 years for what he's done. And listen, I've done criminal defense my whole life. I've been in prisons. I've visited people. This is punishment. 6 years in a prison. I don't care if it's a nice prison. It is huge punishment.
Yeah, having your freedom taken away.
It's forever. 6 years is dog years. Okay, so let this guy out. You know, and let's see what he does. Hopefully, he'll do something good. But I think he's served enough time.
See, I flipped on it because I thought 14 years. And we've discussed this in the past.
And yeah, I feel he should have 28 to life.
I thought 14 was very stiff. I thought maybe 10 years, 8 to 10 would be okay. But now, just with President Trump doing this, it just throws the entire judicial system into flux, questioning everything from the trial judge all the way to the highest court in the land.
Well, but commutations and pardons always do that. I mean, true. Every single time there's a pardon for the last 100 years, everyone has thought it was controversial, because there's always going to be people who say, let the person do their time. Why should you forgive them? There's very few people that we can agree should be pardoned. And, you know, again, I'm not a big Trump fan, but he can do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem, and that's why he shouldn't be president. He can do anything he wants to do. Stick around. More coming up from you in a moment. And Kira Conti's here. She's on Sunday nights on WGN. What time?
7 to 9.
And enjoying herself very much.
Yes.
Well, I get to more on entertainment in just a second. Dean, we have Kira Conti here.
I know. I've been listening.
And we're talking about the Blagojevich thing. All right, here's my point. Because I echo what Pat Brady said before, because you and I disagree on this, about Blagojevich potentially getting out, regardless of the Trump piece of the story. Brady brought up the inequity in sentencing and the fact that there are kids in jail now for weed offenses that are doing 20 years because they couldn't afford a decent lawyer. So why should a guy like Blagojevich get a break when there's so much bad sentencing and bad stories in prison now? That's my question to you.
Oh, okay. You know what? There, we have federal sentencing guidelines, and guidelines are really mandatory. But there is some wiggle room, and I think the judge here really hit Blagojevich hard. That said, I think judges need to have leeway. You know, most judges will tell you they don't like those guidelines because they want to be able to be compassionate in some ways. And in this case, I think what the judge was doing, and he actually said, he wanted to set a precedent. He was tired of seeing all this corruption, and he saw it with Ryan. He saw it with all the other politicians, and it just doesn't seem to stop. And he seemed to think that this would set a precedent. I think it kind of backfired, because I think people aren't compassionate for Blagojevich, and I think they think that, what was he doing? Horse trading? He was just doing politics as usual. So so I think the incentive was good, but I think that the result did not have the effect.
But if politics as usual is threatening to exploit and blackmail a children's hospital and do all the other things there are, then we shouldn't have politics as usual. Couldn't he have gotten 30? Wasn't it mandatory 30 in this?
Oh, Steve, you're so hard.
No, I'm just listen. I'm not on most people. I'm this guy. I am equally tired of anybody in power that exploits their power for their own greed. It should be hit.
But everybody's doing it.
But why?
You do not go into politics unless you're a narcissist or you have a power.
It's issue. The same reason you
and
get
I'm
a talk
not saying,
show.
I'm not saying the Pat Brady's of the world and the Dick Durbin's of the world. We have some very good people in politics. Let's not forget that, right? But a lot of people go in for the wrong reasons. But
everybody's doing it isn't a reason to do it. It isn't a reason to look the other way.
And people have to raise money. That's another thing. They're under huge pressure to raise a lot of money. I think it's $10,000 a day if you're a U.S. senator. That's like the mandatory minimum that you need.
They literally have a place in Washington. Yes. You have to go across the street and start making phone calls.
Yeah.
I'm now turning you over to your own counselor. Dean?
My question is this, that if Rod Blagojevich gets out of jail, will he go back to dyeing his hair or stay gray?
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I think all of us wonder.
I say salt and pepper.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Only because she likes the singing group of the 90s.
Push it real good.
Okay, white people, it's salt and pepper. Salt and pepper.
It is going to be interesting.
Salt and pepper and other condiments.
If he gets out, it's really going to be interesting because who knows what he's going to do. I mean, a pardon would probably allow him to run for office. I don't think he's going to do that. But certainly he's going to do something colorful, do we not?
Oh, he'll have some sort of reality show or some sort of entertainment show.
Wait. So we don't need to believe that he's going to make up for lost time with his daughters? He's actually going to do something about Rod?
You know what? Do you think he's a bad guy, like as far as with his family?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
The day before he went into jail, his little girl had to actually go, "Daddy, come inside," while he continued to snap for the cameras and say hi to the media and talk about how bad the story was with him in the last few minutes of his freedom.
Okay.
He's a bad guy.
I do have a legit question for Karen also, because I think what I heard yesterday was that President Trump may commute his sentence.
Right.
What's the difference between that and a pardon?
Yeah. Commutation and a pardon. Dean's up for both.
Commutation is just a shortening of the sentence, meaning you get out of jail right now.
Mm-hmm. But the conviction sticks.
But the conviction sticks, so you may not be able to vote, may not be able
still
to sit on a
record.
Jury. You may not be able to own a business, because some laws say that you can't own a business if you're a felon, and you can't have a firearm. But if you have a pardon, that is as if it never happened.
Free and unfettered.
Yeah. So they're talking about a pardon for Stewart because she's out of jail, obviously. And they're talking commutation again. Who knows what's going to happen?
Right.
He can do either.
Expunged. Have you had Martha Stewart's pardon cake? Oh, it is so good.
Divine.
And that's a good thing.
It's freeing.
Oh.
All right. Listen, thank you for coming over. I know you got a busy morning
of trying to
protect
weekend.
Your friend, Rod Blagojevich. Karen Conti, Sunday night, what time?
7 to 9.
All right, Dane, when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Trumpster. We're going to be talking about Samantha Bee and her filthy little mouth.
Tweeting this morning. The president's tweeting about Samantha Bee this morning.
Well, that's a good use of his time. He has no time, Andrea, to talk to Bob Mueller. He's got a tweet about Samantha Bee.
That's right.
And a movie or two to talk about as well when we come back.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Sponsored by brand new Smile Dental Implant Center. This, of course, is Moron Entertainment. So Trump's tweeting about Samantha Bee?
Well, the whole thing with Samantha Bee on her show this past week, she referred to Ivanka Trump with...
She called her a feckless C-word.
Yeah, and has apologized. Comedy Central has apologized. But this morning, and she's lost two sponsors. As well, State Farm Insurance and Auto Trader say that they do not want to be on that show. If that's what the show is about, that they don't want to be represented by that in any way.
And by the way, two sponsors in a little cable show, which is what this amounts to in the big world of TV, that's the big deal.
Yeah, and I think this is significant because I would argue that that's the only reason that ABC fired Roseanne is because they were worried about advertiser repercussions later on. This is all about money.
Yep.
But earlier this morning, around 6:30 this morning, President Trump was on the old Twitter and said, "Why aren't they firing No Talent Samantha Bee for the horrible language used on her low-rating show? A total double standard, but that's okay. We are winning, and we'll be doing so for a long time to come." Okay. This is President Trump, who has still not directly commented on Roseanne Barr's racist tweet from earlier this week, only to turn it back on himself and saying, why hasn't he gotten an apology from ABC President Bob Iger?
The guy who never apologizes for all the horrific things that he says.
But he, the president has decided to chime in on this one. Believe me, if Comedy Central thought they were going to lose a lot of money, Samantha Bee would be gone. That's the only reason that ABC hedging their bets and figuring that there would have been a terrible backlash had they not done anything about Roseanne's tweets.
She's on TBS, isn't she?
Samantha Bee?
Yeah.
Yes, you're
TBS.
Right. Yeah.
TBS,
yeah. You're absolutely correct.
Yes,
that's
TBS.
Right.
But having said that, again, these are shows that if you got a 2 share on a cable show, that's a huge number. And she has weeks where she approaches that kind of a number. So it's a big deal. And a couple of sponsors, it's a big deal. And I'm not sure she's out of hot water yet. And frankly, she shouldn't be.
Yeah, she seems genuinely apologetic about the whole thing, and realizes they went too far. Which to me, this is opening up a whole new thing now with comedians who are seemingly going too far and having their pushing the envelope explode in their faces.
Words matter when somebody else is paying the bill. When you're on stage and you're doing a freelance stand-up set, when you're representing yourself, say anything you want. Mm-hmm. Suffer the repercussions appropriately. But when you're under contract to some other company who is paying the bills, that has responsibilities and partnerships with sponsors, with other people, you have to behave in a certain way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised how far cable goes lately, with even with language. You notice that, too?
Absolutely.
On basic cable, there's a lot that never used to be.
Well, back
on
TBS, Conan, late night, you'll hear the S word constantly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Roseanne tweeting still?
Yes. She also obviously learned her lesson and has continued to tweet this week. She yesterday tweeted that she wants the phone numbers of Valerie Jarrett, comedian Michelle Wolf, who was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and billionaire George Soros, because she personally wants to apologize to them for targeting them on Twitter and insulting them. So if anyone has their phone numbers, if you could please get a hold of Roseanne.
Yeah, get a hold of her on Twitter. She's there all the time.
She won't miss the message. She also put out a pretty lengthy tweets yesterday about how she begged ABC not to cancel her show, putting her cast and crew out of work. She said that she begged them, offered to do free publicity, do whatever they wanted if they would just not cancel her show. So she's revealing all of that right now. Why? I do not know.
Movie you recommend for the weekend?
Really, the only big movie that's opening this weekend is called Adrift. You know, there have been a lot of Lost at Sea movies. You know, something happens and you get lost at sea.
That's why I never go on a boat.
It's your basic Gilligan's Island story. Did we learn nothing from that 2-hour cruise that they went on Gilligan's Island? In this case, two free spirits fall in love in Tahiti. They love adventure. They love doing semi-dangerous things.
Well, it's the story of Robin and Larry.
They decide to sail from Tahiti all the way to San Diego. About halfway into the voyage, the worst hurricane in recorded history strikes, tearing their boat apart, leaving them with injuries, very little food, and this what's left of this boat now adrift for 41 days. And it's a story, I have to say, I'm not a fan of these Lost at Sea movies at all, because mostly they're all exactly the same. And this one is not. This one is very original in its own way. It is the story about this true story about what happened. But it's a story about survival and determination. It's a story in which the protagonist in this movie is a strong, caring, smart, resourceful woman. And it is also a beautiful love story as well of the relationship between these two people who go out on this cruise. So I like this movie. I gave it Dean's List A, and it didn't make me nauseous.
Yeah, and a lot of movies that have nothing to do with water do make you sick.
That's literally.
Before we let you go, Justin Kaufman is at Ogilvie train station greeting people as they come into town this morning.
Mm, on purpose?
Yes, because this little kid's kindergarten in Keene, Texas, starts every day by one kid in the class shaking hands or hugging the other kids.
Right, I saw this. So he's hugging total strangers?
He's hugging and shaking the hands with total strangers. Oh, Justin, how's it going?
You don't have to be hostile. It's just a free hug. Just walk. Okay, buddy? God. Hi, free hug. Free handshakes for the Steve Cochran Show. How you doing? I know the train's late. Don't blame me. I'm sorry. In Texas, they do this. Kindergartners do it. Nobody?
I think you got to get off the Texas thing. I don't think that's helping him.
Sounds like it's going great.
The crowd is turning.
How you doing?
Justin? Justin, how's it going?
They're delayed. There are two trains that are delayed, and they're not happy.
People are in extra good moods.
All right, now whenever you mention my name, you seem to get a response, pro or con.
Right, let's try it. Let's try it really quick. Ready? Hey, can I give you a free hug for the Steve Cochran Show? Come on, bud. All right, again. Didn't work, Steve.
All right. Well, I felt like your heart was in it.
He was mad. Like, he gave me a look. Like, I will
hurt you. Yes. All right. Well, listen. Listen, for 45 minutes you've been out there, how would you sum it up? How's it gone?
I would sum it up that I really appreciate that you gave me this plum assignment on the eve of the West Nile season.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I have Purell here.
Yeah, Justin told us as he was walking out that he's a germaphobe. Yeah.
And then, I mean, there's germaphobe, and then there's shaking random hands coming off a train in the middle of rush hour. That's a different level of hell.
Well, they're listeners.
A different level of hell. Well,
all right, listen, you've done enough. Anyway. Make your way back here now. Make your way back. Come back. Hug a few people on the way, but come back.
Guys, I could share a cab with one of these people getting off the train. How you doing? Steve Cochran wants to give you a hug. Steve Cochran really wants to touch you. Is there any way that I can get a hug?
Wow. Maybe you shouldn't be saying Steve Cochran wants to touch you.
You know what we should do, Dean? We should send him out as Annabelle Laval's intern.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Annabelle Laval would be hugging people like crazy. I don't know what, if the approach is different. Because when I'm hearing Justin say, can I give you a hug? What I'm hearing in my own head is, can I lick your arm?
You know what? You're not wrong.
He needs an accent.
He does.
Maybe that would work. A Frenchie accent.
Use our Frenchie.
That's right. Borrow it.
Everyone loves the Frenchies.
Coming up, headlines in a moment. Again, more on entertainment, sponsored by abrandnewsmile.com. Back after this.
I believe I am psychic.
The Heat tonight, and a guy on the mound that does not have a big fastball. I think that 13 home runs away is probably going to go by the boards this evening.
My first prediction, I am either going to fly or ruin that family's picnic.
Hey, you've ruined our picnic!
Psychic!
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We'll get Steve Stone just a second. Do you see the Sun-Times headline?
I did.
Cover story of the Sun-Times, Rod Blagojevich, a hair closer to freedom.
Mm-hmm. Pun intended.
Hey, here's a guy with great hair. And as far as we know, he's never done prison time. Steve Stone on baseball, sponsored by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Good morning, Steve.
Well, you're half right.
All right, what are we going to do about getting this White Sox team? Young, going to win, down the road, certainly with regularity. With a little more regularity, get a few more wins now. What do we need?
Well, right now you need some time. And unfortunately, time, patience, rebuilding doesn't come quickly. If it did, there wouldn't be any rebuilding. There would just be a recharging of the batteries, but that's not the case. And a whole lot of the guys that you're seeing right now trying to do as well as they can possibly do are just not going to be here when this team is ready to win. That's just the nature of what kind of talent the Sox have in their minor leagues. And with the draft coming up, and it's coming up on the 4th, which is just a few days from now, the Sox have the 4th pick, which will mean they'll be able to restock their minor league system, get some more prospects. They should get a terrific player in the number 4 spot in the draft, and that will only deepen the farm system that's already very deep now.
So, Dave Ennett is here, and Dave, you have lost a lot of sleep over the White Sox this season. What is your number one concern?
Well, I mean, I'm
agree with Steve. I mean, number one concern, you want to be setting the right tone for the future.
Do you feel the tone is being set? Because I do.
Well, I do. I guess the one concern, Steve, and maybe you could speak to this a little bit, is that you see inconsistency with these really talented arms that the White Sox have. And Reynaldo Lopez, who's looked so good, had a rough day the other day in Cleveland. Do you just chalk that up to that could happen to a guy who's been in the major leagues for 8 or 10 years, not just a guy who's a young pitcher?
Well, certainly a young pitcher doesn't know how to minimize the damage. Pretty mm-hmm. much when it starts rolling downhill for a young pitcher, he doesn't know how to adjust on the mound. He can't make that evaluation, and all of a sudden you're going to come out and you're going to fix what the problem is on a given day. I can only go with personal experience as well as the experience of watching a lot of pitchers over these years. But my first 3 years, I was 5-9, 6-8, and 6-11. So I got the feeling that I wasn't going to be in the Hall of Fame. But things got a little bit better because I kept getting the opportunity to go out there. And that's what a rebuild is all about as far as a team is concerned. They're giving young players a chance to go out there. If this was a contending team and Giolito had the run that he's had, he would be in the minor leagues. There's no doubt about that. And the same thing with a whole lot of these guys. But it's not a contending team. So they're able to show some patience and give these guys a chance. If they are indeed going to take the next step, they're learning in the major leagues. That's actually the best place to learn if, in fact, you don't learn the lessons in the minor leagues. And with players being taken up to the major leagues a little more quickly these days because of maybe a lack of talent or organizational needs, you're going to have to learn those lessons in the major leagues. And believe me, it's just not a pleasant experience when you're going badly. In fact, you've heard all kinds of boos all around. We're hearing it with veteran players on the north side on occasion. Hugh Darvish is very unhappy. The fans are booing him. And again, I felt the same way when I went to Baltimore as a free agent. That was their first free agent acquisition. I signed a 4-year deal. The team was on the way to winning 102 games, and I was under 500, and I was booed just about every day. But you can take that as a motivation tool. And if you're an older player, and I was at that point, I was a veteran, you use it as a motivation tool. You go out there and say, okay, well, you won't boo me when I start going well. And that's exactly what happened. And for these young guys, they don't have a whole lot of that to fall back on. Understand something. These guys are in the major leagues because they dominated each and every league on the way to this point. And so with failure as a great motivating tool, because if you understand competition, you'll realize you learn much more from failure than you do from success.
Right.
When you have success, you just roll with it. And you roll with it because everything is going well. You think it's going to continue to go well. And so you just go out there, you take the baseball. You threw very well last time. No reason to assume you won't throw very well this time. But when you have failure, what you're supposed to do to make it a healthy failure, to make it a learning experience, is throw out the end result. The end result is a loss. You throw that out and you figure out how you got there. And you look maybe a pitch you made in the second inning that you probably shouldn't have made. You look at a mindless pitch you might have made in the third inning that you probably shouldn't have made. Maybe you go inside 1-2 times too often to a hitter who finally opens up a little bit, guesses with you, and hits the ball out of the ballpark. You learn from that. You can be very introspective when you're not going as well as you'd like. And that's what these guys are learning. They're learning to fail in some instances for the first time. And failure is a great motivating tool. And the guys that go on to stardom are the guys that can take that failure and make it work for them. The other guys, they go on to do something else because this is not the career for them.
One guy has been, I think, kind of a bright spot for the Sox out of the bullpen last couple of weeks has been Jace Fry. What difference do you see in him from when you've seen him before?
Well, last year when he came up, I don't think his arm was entirely healthy, and he was uncomfortable on the mound. He wasn't getting anything over the plate. And, you probably read the same article I read in the Sun-Times this morning where they did a very nice article on him and talked about the fact that he's coming back from a lot of physical injuries. He's throwing the ball very well. He's getting everything over the plate. And when you have as good a pitches as he has, then it comes down to just control. There's some guys who don't have enough pitches, and so it doesn't matter their control. They just don't have enough stuff to be here. But he does. And as a situational left-hander, it could very well be that he's here for a long time. Now, he has aspirations beyond that. But after so many arm injuries and the need of this team to have a good situational left-hander out there, I think he's best suited for what he's doing now. So when you look at the curveball, it's breaking much more sharply, plus he's throwing it over the plate. Then he gets ahead and he wipes him out with that slider. The fastball certainly is good enough with enough movement to be able to throw it by some of these better left-hand hitters. And I think he provides something that every team needs, if not the White Sox. And I think the Sox need it also. And that is a guy that you can bring in and pretty well be assured that he's going to get that left-hander out. You know, he went 9 innings without giving up a hit, just gave up his first run the other day. So you like what he's doing, and that's another young guy that could very well be part of the future. But with the arm injuries, you want to see if he stays healthy. If he does, I think that he can be a very valuable member of this team.
Biggest Sox fan in my eye line right now is Super Joe, who tech produces this program. Super Joe, say hi to Steve Stone and ask him something.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Good, Joe. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You look at some of the Tampa Bay box scores, and you see relievers starting the game and then starters coming in later. Is that something the young White Sox pitchers could benefit from?
No. I think it's a ridiculous idea, although it is an idea. But what happens is you're looking at box scores from May. Show me box scores in August when those same guys are going to go out there. And by the way, then who saves the game? If your closer starts the game, who exactly saves it? Because as we know, you can certainly lose the game in the early portions of the game. You just can't win the game. And when it comes down to winning, you've got to have a guy or two at the end who are going to get people out. And starters were starters because they usually don't have the stuff to be a closer. And so my feeling is, yeah, it's a really nice novelty idea, and probably through some aspect of the computer saying, well, the toughest inning is the first, and so we'll put our closer in the first. There's also no guarantee that that closer, who, by the way, fails a whole lot, is going to get through the first inning. So I don't particularly care for it because I do believe at the end you need somebody to nail the game down, because you find teams, especially as teams get better, they play closer games. As they play closer games, the game is won in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning or lost in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. If you don't have your best quality closing arm and setup arm available to you in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, who do you have? You have a guy who spent his whole life starting, and now suddenly you're putting him in the bullpen. And that usually doesn't work out very well. But again, you know, in a small sample size, yeah, it could look inviting. But over the long haul, and bear in mind that 162-game season and a 6-month season, you get guys with tired arms, and when they get tired arms, you're going to need guys to close down games, and that's not going to happen with Tampa Bay. When they win one, let me know.
Okay. So, in other words, you're a big fan of that system.
I like it a lot.
I'll give Dave the last word here, but is Ricky Renteria the absolute right guy for what the Sox are going through right now?
I believe that he is, and I think that you're not seeing the Ricky Renteria you will see when he has a good team. You know, Ricky got a chance with the Cubs for 1 year, and that was not a good team, and then Joe Maddon came along. They assembled a very good team, and Joe reaped the benefits of that. And Ricky has not had a good team since he came over to the White Sox. So what you're seeing is a guy that can relate to his players. I think he's got a very good idea about what he has to do. I had talked with him at length on the flight the other night, and he talked about his idea of getting the most out of each and every guy and how he had to treat each and every guy differently. And I believe he is the man for the job. And, you know, we won't be able to really judge his abilities until Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and the entire front office staff reward him with a team who can play. Then we'll see if Ricky can really manage. I suspect that he can.
Steve, something remarkable is going to happen at Guaranteed Rate Field before tonight's game, something there was no guarantee would happen. Your thoughts on the return of the ballpark to the mound in a ceremonial role tonight for Danny Farquhar?
Because he wasn't a star, he didn't get near the publicity nationally that he should have gotten for what is, and you're right, Dave, a remarkable story. I mean, it absolutely is a remarkable story, and the fact that he was released from the hospital on May 7th after a relatively short period of time going through a life-threatening situation, and we shouldn't minimize the fact that it was touch and go if he would make it. I mean, he had a couple of surgeries to relieve the pressure on the brain. It was something that if he made it, everybody thought, okay, well, he'll make it if he makes it, but then he'll definitely have some brain damage. And if he has brain damage, then the degree of that will be something that the family will deal with. But he's made it all the way back. And the most amazing part of it is his doctor said that he fully expects him to be pitching next year, although he won't clear him this year. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's coming out there and he's visited the clubhouse a couple of different times, this is really his first public appearance. I think it's awe-inspiring for a whole lot of people that have gone through things that are the equal and maybe even surpass what Danny went through. But he's a wonderful guy. He was a good guy when he was here in pitching. I hope that he comes back entirely and he does pitch again. But if he doesn't, he has the ability to take care of his family, to be around the people who love him, and to contribute as the father figure to children and hopefully grandchildren. And he does that because of the great people at Rush and all the people who helped him in the dugout, Herm Schneider and his group and the
right.
EMTs and everybody associated. It's a wonderful story.
The surprisingly strong Milwaukee Brewers this weekend at Guaranteed Rate Field. Enjoy that, Steve Stone. I'm Baseball, sponsored by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Around behind, turns away, and then being one out in front. No! Another try. He scores! Birdman, it's over!
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Man, you missed this in June, don't you?
Damn.
Doesn't it sound like the song of the summer? We got to get the Stanley Cup back. Other people got to quit touching it. Quit touching our cup. We'll talk about the Blackhawks with the great Neil Greenberg, who's got to be just giddy about the Washington Capitals. You know, he writes the fancy stats column for the Washington Post.
Yes.
I wonder how he remains objective. Meanwhile, two games into a really entertaining Stanley Cup final is the great Doc Emrick, who joins us right now from the road. I'm telling you, Doc, I hate the Blackhawks. I hate that the Blackhawks aren't in it, but these first two games have been great.
They have been fantastic, haven't they? It's been wonderful entertainment for people that are hockey fans anyway. It'd be agonizing if you like the Caps or the Golden Knights because they've been agonizing kinds of games to sweat through. But here it is June 1st, and it was kind of fun to hear that song again because that brings back a lot of good memories from past Junes. But hopefully not too agonizing for Hawks fans because there is another year ahead.
Does it seem weird to you that the Blackhawks aren't in the Cup?
Yeah, it does. Well, after 9 years of having such prominence, yes, it does. It seems odd that we're not in Chicago, but I got out of Vegas, and I have all my cash. And you know why? Because I didn't play.
That's the right move. That's absolutely the right
move.
That's
it. It's the old philosophy that probably the Cats have when they play against a tough team in football. If they don't score, you don't lose.
That's exactly right. Doc on NBC and the NBC Sports Network. Dave, say hi.
Doc, good morning.
Hi, Dave.
How are you? I have to ask you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I heard the song. I heard all of you singing, and I heard a second take. Now the guy with the baton in his hand, Steve, stopped you midway and said it wasn't on key.
So well, that's even close.
You got a real decent one. I hope they saved the second copy.
The second one was good.
Second one was very good.
Yeah, it was.
I have no complaints at all. I have to ask, you've seen so many outstanding performances by goaltenders over the years. The save by Braden Holtby, I hear people discussing it in such reverent tones. This was one of the greatest saves ever. Is that legit? I mean, as you look at that play, because it really was mind-boggling that he was able to get that puck out of the net.
Oh, yes, that he could recover with the paddle of the stick and stop it was remarkable. I think probably the one that saved the world in terms of the course of a hockey series was Marc-Andre Fleury's in Game 7 with a second and a half to go. When you make a Game 7 Stanley Cup final save against a Hall of Famer like Nick Lidstrom that prevents the game from going to overtime on the road, and maybe you lose it, and then maybe you don't get a Stanley Cup, that to me is the ultimate save of all time. So I would have to say, in my time of calling Stanley Cup playoff games, that's probably the ultimate one for me, because this was a game too, but it doesn't make it any less prominent, and it doesn't make it any less earth-shaking than what it happened to be.
Justin and Andrea, say hi.
Hello, Doc. I have a question about the Vegas Knights. The idea of them being an expansion team and this opportunity to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals in their first season as a team, that is obviously a huge story, but it almost in a way overshadows what this team has accomplished on the ice. When you talk about them and the style of hockey that they play, what is it that makes this team so successful? What is it that got them to this point?
It's a combination of things. I think, you know, it's probably talked about a lot and has been this year that they got a better deal in terms of what other teams could protect and what they couldn't protect. So, but they made wise choices, and then they got a tremendous coach that could bond. Okay, so we've got that out of the way. Now what happens at the start of the season is that they have a predominantly home schedule, but they bond together so well at the beginning that they make the best of it and they win a bunch of games. Then they have some adversity in that their main goaltender, Marc-Andre Fleury, loses 2 months with a concussion. And they wind up using five goaltenders.
Five, kids. Five goaltenders.
Wow.
And they still keep winning. And aside from this, and you can't ignore this either, even though it's a sad part of their history. Barry Trotz, who coaches Washington, said he started a team in Nashville. He was the first coach there. And he said, there's nothing tighter than a first-year team because nobody knows where to live. No leadership is in place. It's galvanizing. But unfortunately, what happened in Vegas is there was a tragedy which galvanized everybody more, and that was 58 victims of a concert shooting on the night that they played their last preseason game. Now, these guys got together. They have been working with first responders and the victims' families all year. They went down and they gave blood. They've done things on an ongoing basis all year long. So the community loves them. But the other side of it is it also bonded them very quickly as a group of individuals.
It's a very important point.
Add that to the fact that they're very skilled players, and you have an unusual story in the history
there
of
you
hockey,
Doc,
one like I've never seen.
That's what I was going to ask you about, the fans and the venue. We had the opportunity to catch a game there, and it's loud, it's boisterous, it's really everything. I know no fans are greater than the Chicago fans, but I'm telling you, their fans really, really were fun in getting into it, and you see the Golden Knights flags that are flying all along the strip. So it seems like, well, I wanted to get your thoughts on the venue and the fans.
Let me ask you, Andrea, about your experience. Did you get there in time to see the Knight come out on the ice?
Yes, we did. We did, in fact, see that.
She couldn't say too much because Steve was cursing sitting next to her.
Right. I liked it. I thought it would. Doc, I love a loud sports venue. I thought it was very, very loud. The fans really got into it. It was kind of like a medieval times, if you will, with the jousting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't say too much negative about the Magic Mike style Golden Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Although he did take out the ball.
I wanted to find a medieval times drumstick and whip it at the Knight from where I was sitting.
Drumstick.
Not everybody is going to copy that because no one can. I think that will belong to the Golden Knight because it's a 6-minute long program, and you can't imagine other teams trying to do it. I would never want to see anything different in the presentation pregame than the Chicago Blackhawks do in Chicago. Right, I would never want to see anything different in Detroit. I would never want to see anything different in Montreal than the glorious two anthems that they present. So this, to me, it's uniquely Vegas. Keep it in Vegas. They do a wonderful job of it. Don't try to copy it anywhere else because it's uncopyable.
That's right.
And in terms of the team, it's an exciting venue. And in terms of what OSHA says, 85 decibels... it's illegal.
See, it is loud. We knew it. We're not too old.
There's nobody better than my friend Doc Emmerich. Watch him on NBC and the NBC Sports Networks. And we love the call. The only thing missing are the Blackhawks. We'll get them next year.
And John's got his hand on the buzzer, and he promised he'd buzz it for me twice.
Oh, come on. You're talking about Super Joe. Super Joe, hit him. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Joe.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
Doc Emmerich.
Thank you. All right. Happy birthday.
Yes.
And Andrea, by the way, the word from Eddie O is go for the Triple Crown next weekend.
Oh, I'm in. Oh, I actually have to text him and get some insiders.
That's a great point. Thanks, Doc.
Thanks,
Talk to you later.
That's the great Doc Emmerich. He's got about 45 interviews to do this morning. He was nice enough to jump on with us.
He's the best.
All right. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk with Neil Greenberg. Neil Greenberg writes the fancy stats column in the Washington Post. I love Neil. I read him every day, or every day he writes. He's a genius. But he also can give us some insight into what happened to the Blackhawks this year that we may not know, and why they're going to be better next year, and why they're going to get the cup back. Because I'm sure that's what he's going to tell me.
Yes.
Because he's listening on hold right now. It's 922.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks.
926. Neil Greenberg, fancy stats. First off, congratulations on your hometown Washington Caps. Who said it couldn't be done?
Yeah, it's been pretty electric here. People are talking about this team. I take public transportation to work, and on all sides, people are talking about how this Capitals run and how surprised they were and how engaged they are. And there's just a palpable electricity in the city right now.
Yeah, we're talking to our friend Chuck Todd, as we do every week, yesterday. And Chuck was talking about the fact and reminding us all, D.C. hasn't had a winner since Joe Gibbs. Gibbs is the last time he had a world championship in Washington. We're talking about 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't been in to play for a championship since 1998 was the last time even the Capitals were in contention, and they got swept that year. So this is something that a lot of fans of DC teams have been waiting for a long time, and it was probably the most improbable team to get this far when you look at Washington and you look at the Redskins and you look at the Washington Nationals in baseball and even the Washington Wizards in basketball. But yet here they are. I mean, hockey really is a sport where anything can happen, and the Capitals are making the most of their chance.
Now, obviously, I'm trying to exploit your knowledge for Blackhawks information here, but just to be decent and do the right thing, and because I really have enjoyed these first two games, what do you think, Vegas or the Caps?
I had Caps in six at the beginning of the series. I have no reason to change that thinking. You look at game one, both teams were a little loose. And then game two, I think we saw how Washington's depth can be a factor. I mean, I know they lost Evgeny Kuznetsov, but then you have Lars Eller step right up, have a goal, two assists. They're getting strong play from all sides. Their defensemen, Jacob Vrana, I know he didn't score, but he had a monster game in game two. And then you saw, you know, I heard you talking to Doc about the save that from Braden Holtby. You know, I do think that he can outplay Marc-Andre Fleury, and I think that the Cavs will still win in six.
It would be good for Washington, and the only question would be how fast Donald Trump would take credit for the win. And it wouldn't take long. Dave?
Neil, if Kuznetsov is out, and is there any word on whether he's going to be available for this next game? And if he is out, how much of a setback is that for Washington?
There's no definitive word yet, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a setback as other people. With Kuznetsov out, you reunite Backstrom and Ovechkin on the top line. Obviously, they have tremendous amount of chemistry. And then you move Lars Eller up to the second line. And as I said, we saw how he stepped up, not only in game two of this series, but he also filled in for Nicholas Backstrom when he was injured during the Pittsburgh series, and he played great then too. So I think that part of it was fine. I'm thinking about who they're going to bring up. I think the key might be Alex Chiasson, only because you look at how the Golden Knights play. They're very strong on the boards. They really do love to chip it in and fight for it along in the corners. I think Chiasson would actually help neutralize that a little bit. So while, yes, losing the top line center is bad, especially a guy that's one of the top playoff scorers, but I think Washington will be able to weather the storm.
Justin Coffin, say hi to Neil.
Hi, Neil. If we could talk Chicago Blackhawks for just a second. The Blackhawks missed the playoffs entirely. And the question is, and so many people locally will talk about how the Blackhawks are getting older. They're slower than some of these young teams that are changing the game. Do you see it that way from your perch at the column that the Blackhawks are, that their issue is the fact that they're getting older and they're slower?
And does the math add up? Because we know you've done the math on this.
Well, I think I'd like to see how the team would do if they had Corey Crawford for the last 47 games of the year, right? I mean, it's easy to say that the team looks old and slow when you go from an MVP caliber goaltender to guys that are less than average starting caliber, right? Anton Forsberg, Jeff Glass, et cetera. So I don't know if I'd make that statement just yet. You even look at like where their shot quality was in terms of when and how they took their shot, whether it was a rebound, whether it occurred on the power play. Their expected goal differential was actually better than it was the past 2 years. So I don't think there's really anything to the narrative in terms of them being old and slow. I would say they were more unlucky and injury-ridden than I would to say that they're old and slow. So we'll see what happens next year. Maybe my opinion will change. Well, but right now, I don't see it that way.
To be fair, they were due to be injury-ridden. Yeah. They had such a run, they were due for a season of bad luck. Glad we got it out of the way.
Just quickly, one thing that's never mentioned in the storyline and the narrative of the Blackhawks is Marian Hossa. Marian Hossa, of course, had the allergy to this hockey equipment. He retired.
Had to
retire. But what's the impact of losing a veteran who is a champion, a future Hall of Famer?
Two-way player.
Like the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's created not only a hole in the room, but also up front, right? And I think losing Panarin made it worse a little bit. So I agree with you. Having a guy like Hossa is certainly a stabilizing presence. But he was also, I think at this point in his career, he might be a little bit more replaceable only because he's not the Marian Hossa necessarily that he was a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But anytime you lose a top player, you know, you're going to have to shuffle the lines and figure out a way to get some help. But you look at Alex Brindacat, you look at Nick Schmaltz, Gustafsson. I mean, these are guys that could step up next year and help this team return to the postseason.
All right, we're going to fast run out of time here, but I got to ask you about two guys, Jonathan Toews and Brandon Saad. Toews, one of the best in the game, period, has had two down years in a row. Saad comes here in the trade, and we expect him to be unbelievable, and he throws up a hat trick in the first game and then kind of disappears. What do you think is going to happen to those two guys?
I think they're going to have bounce-back years. I think a lot of it was just some bad bounces. I think that everything else, the process, the shot quality, the shot generation was there. They just didn't fall. I don't think there's any reason to panic.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Really enjoy your work, Neil. You know I'm a fan, and thank you for jumping on.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys soon.
That's Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. Fancy stats. Follow him on social and read him in the Washington Post. It's 9:33. Eddie Johnson, police superintendent. Ooh, we got questions.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
.944 Superintendent Eddie Johnson for your Chicago Police Department joins us. First off, as always, I thank you for your service and the service of the men and women that work for you.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks for having me this morning.
Appreciate you being on. Rough night last night along the lakefront, scariest times on Michigan Avenue in spots. What do we know about these wilding creeps, and what are you guys doing about it?
Well, you know what? There's always a concern with groups of individuals coming down, you know, on the lakefront or downtown, or in any neighborhood, as a matter of fact, you know, committing nefarious activities. But, you know, we beef up our patrols. And, you know, I just have a message for them. If they want to continue to do it, then be prepared to be held accountable for it.
Superintendent, also, too, there's a move by, I know Brendan Riley's asking for some more officers to be patrolling the Gold Coast areas and these areas as well. And I know they're trying to make the laws a little easier for you to kind of scoot people along the bike paths and get them away from that area as well, too. How is that transforming as well?
Well, you know, Andrea, here's the thing, you know, all the aldermen have an obligation to their constituents, and we understand that, you know, so our job is to be equitable about where we put our resources, and of course, we don't ignore any part of the city, you know, but to that extent, you know, we beefed up our bike patrols down there, you know, just to ensure that we have adequate resources, and then if, you know, we see a situation occur, we started our summer mobile unit back up, so if we see situations occurring that might need more resources, then we'll certainly send them that way. But people have to understand, there's no law against just being in a group, walking anywhere in the city, you know, so we have to be mindful of that. You know, we have still have to be mindful of constitutional policing.
Yeah. Superintendent Johnson, Justin Kaufman here. That is an interesting question that's come up after the Memorial Day weekend. One of the tactics used, which seemed to be creative and worked, was to corral some of these kids to the train line, to the Red Line CTA train, and express train the kids back to the 35th Street, to other places around the city. You know, there's a question about whether or not that's violating civil liberties. Do you have to think about that as a superintendent when you're thinking of creative ways to approach policing, especially when you're talking about situations where they aren't violating their constitutional rights?
Of course. You know, we always have to think about that, and it's of a concern. But I tell you this, you know, I was the deputy chief down there for 4 years, so I'm well aware of those types of situations. But, you know, we utilize best practices from around the country. And, you know, we don't physically force people to go anywhere, but we will. If we see large groups of young people come down, sometimes we will have the bikes go with them just to make sure nothing happens to them or to prevent them from doing anything to other folks, you know. But, you know, when we do that, we simply direct them to other places. We don't physically make them go, you know. But, and, you know, oftentimes when we're down there walking with them or the bikes are going with them, they lose interest in whatever they're doing and they go wherever it is they go.
This problem, of course, is another reason for national media and some folks in the media in general to scare folks away from downtown. What is your level of confidence that people can safely come to the city and enjoy themselves?
Yeah, you know what, Steve, I tell you that Chicago is a safe city, and certainly the downtown area is relatively safe. You know, our obligation as police officers is public safety, period. You know, and we don't take that responsibility lightly. And the downtown area is one of the safest places in the country, to be quite honest. You know, sometimes you're going to have some challenges down there, but, you know, we address them quickly and you know, alleviate the problem. And, you know, this past Memorial Day weekend was an example of it. You know, when we made the decision to direct people to other places to leave the downtown area, you know, we prevented what could have been, you know, some issues with sure, violence down there. So, you know, we always have to, at the end of the day, think about public safety. And every decision that I make and the command staff and supervisors out there is in regards to public safety. But we do that within the framework of not violating somebody's civil rights.
And can we put the racism argument away, people? Because this is like the Me Too argument. Racists know they're racist. They may argue with you all day long, but racism is not something you have to try to define. It's quite easy to spot. So if there's a store right, owner that's trying to protect the store from a bunch of creeps, I don't care if they're white, black, brown, pink, I don't care what color you are, you're wielding
exactly
sticks and bats outside my door, I have a right to lock my door, correct?
That's exactly right. That, you know, that doesn't matter, you know, and it really frustrates me at times, Steve, to be quite honest. You know, we get criticized for when large groups come down there and they do something. Well, why didn't you all do something? And then we get criticized if we do something. So we have to figure out what do we want from the police department, you know. But at the end of the day, if I had to take some hits for the cops out there trying to do the right thing, then so be it. Because at the end of the day, those store owners have a right to protect their property. And we have an obligation to help keep them safe.
Right. And it amazes me, too, Superintendent, that the extra patrols. I see the patrols everywhere, the bike patrols, the foot patrols in front of Water Tower, along the bike path in the South Loop. And to those who are criticizing and protesting a new police training facility, it just boggles my mind. Because do you know what I mean? Because I see, and we cover these protests,
yes,
at City Hall, and just nothing but calm. You know, I just don't understand the protests over a facility,
you know,
that would help better the department.
Exactly. And here's the thing that I want people to understand. You know, the mayor and city council has put a lot of resources into ensuring that their police department is professional and one of the best in the country. But you don't get there unless you invest in it. And the simple fact of the matter is, our current police academy was built in the 1980s. It's not adequate for what we need to do now. And if you want better trained and a more professional police department, then you have to give them the facilities to be able to do that. And our current academy just doesn't have the capacity to do that. You know, so it's mind-boggling to me also. You know, people want us to be the best. Well, then we have to invest in them. in us to be the best. And then it's my obligation to ensure we are the best. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I understand people want to see resources put in other places of the city, but I would counter that with, well, then let's try and do both. But if you want your police department to be the best, then we have to treat them like the best.
Well, you know, speaking for the protesters, but as you just mentioned, there's a question about allocation of resources, especially when you're talking about where we are in 2018 with city money. But the bigger question is about training. If you're going to build a new police academy, are you also looking at how police officers are trained? Are you thinking about non-confrontational or different ways to police in 2018 after what we've seen in the last decade here in Chicago?
Of course, you know, so here's the thing. We know that across the country, best practices would dictate that you do more scenario-based training instead of more streaming video training so that they can actually get a hands-on experience. And that the only way that we can do that in Chicago, we're the second largest department in this country. You know, we got 13,000 cops. We can't put them in a small building and expect them to be able to perform scenario-based training. Scenario-based training is the key to 21st century policing.
Well, let's go on this question, and I ask it with respect. The Lieutenant Fenner's lawsuit, I know you can't talk about legal stuff that's going on with the department, but is it a story because she's your wife, or is it a story because it's a problem?
Yeah, it's a story because it's my wife. You know, listen, any CPD employee has the right to bring lawsuits if they feel they've been harmed in any way. So, of course, I can't talk about that. You know, we wouldn't be talking about any EOC complaint, as a matter of fact. So I think it's just a story because of who she is.
Good luck with all of it. We got another beautiful weather weekend, and I get very tired of the fact that beautiful weather is used as an opportunity for bad guys to do bad things. I hope your men and women are safe, and I hope people come to their senses soon.
Well, thanks, Steve. You know, listen, we just swore an oath to protect this city, and we're going to do just that. And people that want to commit these idiotic acts of what I would refer to as terrorism, then we're going to hold them accountable. It's as simple as that.
Got a little piece of news for you off the air. Hold on for us, and thanks for the time. That's Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who's got a very difficult job. But listen, is anything more maddening than seeing the coverage of this great city be turned into stories that make people think, well, yeah, I can't walk down. Look, we right outside the window now. We got a bunch of folks visiting who are whooping it up, having a good time.
Well, Steve, 847 says, as long as this goes on in the city, we won't be down for dinner. And for someone to say that, to say they wouldn't come downtown because of what they see in the 10 o'clock news or what might be at the...
You're missing it.
It's a very small thing. My parents actually have a condo in Streeterville. They live here all the time to act as if this is happening and people are getting pushed in the lake and it's just brazen right in front of you. That's just not the case.
I would drop my mom off now and let her walk from here to the Hancock and back, and not because I think it's, you know, I don't have time to take her. It's because the city's completely safe. I like my mom.
Ma, there's a Best Buy that way.
Hey, Mom, could you run an errand? Back with Bill and Wendy shortly on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I appreciate Justin playing guitar this morning.
I'm the guitar player who uses his face, too.
Justin Cochran, can you play an instrument? Do you have any musical talent?
I do. I play a little guitar when I need to. I know a G chord.
Does your son go stop it when you play guitar?
He does. I thought I was such a great dad playing Indigo Girls. Hey, listen to this. Mm-hmm. Listen to this. He was gone in 10 seconds.
Abigail is 2.5. Yesterday, I'm hanging out with her a little bit, and she'd gone to music class with her grandmother. And I said, well, what'd you sing? She said, happy birthday. And I started going, happy birthday. She goes, stop. Pop,
really?
Stop. Stop. You're embarrassing you and our entire family. All right, Bill and Wendy next. First this, and then we're right back. I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. The stress will continue here at the Tribune Tower as we prepare for the move that's sort of underway. And you talk about a first world problem.
Yeah.
I had to park like another 40 feet away today.
No.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, are you all packed, though? Is your box and a half ready to go?
I have been fired so many times. I only had a total of 3 boxes, 2 that went home with me and 1 that goes to the new office.
Yeah.
That's it.
Very good.
Yeah.
It's sad to see Bill and Wendy's office all ripped apart.
Yeah.
Well, that happened a couple of months ago, and we thought we were throwing them out. That was way before the move.
But if you know the office, there's so many tchotchkes and fun things that are on the shelves, and they're all gone. Now it's just a
Yep.
Barren.
Did you guys go through this though where you go, I don't know if I want to move that. Maybe I just take that
off. Oh, I threw
Maybe
so much out.
It. I threw a lot of crap out.
Can I show you something that I found yesterday?
Hold on. This is why I was wondering, because I know Bill, and I've known you for a long time. I don't think you're good at throwing stuff out.
I can never find pens when I'm here.
Oh, good. You stole pens?
But I found them yesterday. How many pens is that? About 40 pens?
It's
about 40
bouquet of pens.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because we wondered who was stealing all the pens.
It's me. Here. It turns out it's me.
This is a game at the fair. 48 pens.
That's a lot of pens.
And a pair of Walgreens glasses.
Yeah. For good measure.
Is that a pencil with an eraser? Wow. Yeah.
Are you opening an office, Max? Because there's not many of those anymore.
I'm thinking about that. Yeah.
Good call.
Yep.
See, that's what we should have done at the train station, hand out pens.
Everyone gets a pen.
Everyone gets a pen, Steve.
Germ phobe like you, you couldn't handle it.
Penn Station.
What are you guys doing today?
Just
and by the way, you're better than that.
Bill.
That's why I ignored it. What are you doing today?
Just more of that kind of stuff.
Well, if it's this good, get started. We'll see you Monday.